Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
Oh, good morning to you. Good morning. And it's Dr. Jerry Mixon today.
All by my lonesome.
All by your lonesome. I'm Lynette. We decided to give Dr. Umat a day off. So she gets some vacation now and some time with family.
She's up in Canada with her husband's family.
Okay. Probably listening. Hi, Dr. Umat. Enjoy your time and that cup of tea that you are probably having with your husband's family. Oh, well, here we are. We're in August. We've not been together since last month.
Yep. This is my birthday month.
That's right.
76 this month.
76. At the end of the month, I want to say August 28th.
Yep, that's it.
Oh, good. Whew. That would have been embarrassing as soon as I guessed.
3 weeks from Monday, I think.
Okay. And you will be one more year young.
That's right.
Yeah. For you, the clock keeps going
backwards. I will have survived another year.
Yes. Oh, well, we are here live in the studio, Dr. Jerry Mixon, to answer all of those questions. If you've been dying to ask him about this or that, or maybe you have a follow-up, you were like, going in for maybe an operation or a surgical procedure, and you'd like to give us your good news follow-up, we'd like to talk with you, or recent diagnosis, or whatever it is that you are questioning these days. Why don't you get on the phone at the beginning of our show instead of at the end? Because we don't like to hurry people up and cut them off.
It's really kind of sad.
Yeah, we
sometimes
feel bad.
The most important questions come in the last 5 minutes.
Yes, and we're like, oh, we don't want to shorten you up or miss the call.
We don't have a choice.
So if you're listening now, you've got a question, be one of the first on the phone. I'll give you that number before we get our medical update here. To get into the studio today, it's 800-465-8770. Okay, Dr. Mixon, did I see that COVID is back for summer? What? Or is this, hopefully it's just a rumor, or what's happening?
It's not a rumor, but it is a political overreaction.
Oh, okay.
You know, the CDC is warning that we may have another COVID emergency on our hands.
Oh, boy.
Because there are, you know, a few COVID cases. I mean, it's up like 14%, but the baseline that's raising that 14% was almost zip.
Yes.
So, you know, you get a few cases, you get 14% more. So what?
But not like filling hospitals and overflowing and all.
We got
none
more
of that
people
going
dying
on
in bicycle accidents than we do in COVID right now. So
okay.
No. You know, so have we got a bicycle accident emergency where you have to lock everybody down?
No.
I mean, come on, people.
Oh, I did have a friend that said she had to cancel something because she had COVID. I'm like, what? I mean, I haven't even tested for that. And she had to because of work. And 2 days later, she was back at work.
Yeah.
She felt fine. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what this variant of COVID is mostly doing.
Just this little cold thing.
If you're 85 years old, fragile, in a nursing home, you know, trying to struggle your way through another month with your cancer and your dementia, then yeah, COVID's a real threat to you.
Yes.
But, you know, for the vast majority of people that are able to get up and walk around and lead their day-to-day lives, COVID is a nuisance.
Oh, boy.
So.
All right. So back in the news with the politicians trying to freak us out.
That's right. Yeah. Looking for another excuse to seize a few more unconstitutional powers. So, so not a big deal with COVID.
Okay.
What else is going on?
Let's see.
We've got they've got a birth control pill that has now been approved to be sold over the counter, so you don't need a prescription for it anymore.
Wow. What makes this one different than what we've had in the past?
Political pressure.
Ah, okay.
So This is actually an old pill. It's been around for decades and decades.
Okay.
You know, and it's got the same risks as the prescription ones.
Okay. So is this one you take every day?
This is one
just you, like you used
you
to
take it every
to,
day. Okay. It comes in your little 28-day pack, and you take
pop
one
them
every
out
day.
Every day. Yeah. Okay.
Sure. And just like all the prescription ones, if you're a smoker, you should never take it because. Uh-huh. You know, smokers who take birth control pills are at high risk of strokes and heart attacks.
Okay.
You know, but they should be in a big black, you know, black box warning. If you smoke or vape, do not use birth control pills because it kills people. But, you know, that's kind of the way it works. What else is really new? Not a whole lot, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, things are just kind of steaming along, doing fine. Got a couple of interesting papers that I'm preparing some talks on, but in fact, one of them I think is really kind of funny. People are always wanting to know what can we do to improve our brain function, cognition.
Yes.
You know? And there is a cocktail of supplements that I would recommend for people, but there's a couple of papers have come out recently that showed distinct improvement in two compounds. One is resveratrol.
Okay.
They did a 2-year study on postmenopausal women and put them on resveratrol. It was a placebo-controlled crossover study. That means they put half the women on resveratrol and half on placebo for a year. And then the second year, they switched them. The ones that had been on resveratrol went on placebo, and those that had been on placebo went on the resveratrol. Okay, so that over a 2-year period, they got to see
the difference.
The difference on each group. And it turned out that the women who took resveratrol every day as a supplement had a 33% improvement in their baseline cognitive skills, their short-term memory, and their problem-solving abilities. So it turns out that resveratrol is very, very good for the brain.
Okay.
Which is why I take 1,000 milligrams a day.
And your brain is working at top speed.
Seems to at least be turning over at idle speed, if not better. And then another one is creatine.
Okay.
And again, this was a study done on young people, not just postmenopausal older folks. This was a creatine supplementation on younger people. And they did their baseline cognitive studies, and then they did their studies after 3 months on the creatine. And creatine improved short-term memory.
Okay.
And mood, and some problem-solving skills. So that was fascinating, though. And we should have been able to predict this. In retrospect, it's obvious. You got the biggest improvement in vegetarians.
Whoa.
Okay. Well, and that's because vegetarians don't eat meat.
And so they're not getting creatine.
And creatine is present in
meat. Okay.
Yeah. And so even young people can improve their cognition. But young meat eaters did not improve as much because they already were getting their creatine. Young vegetarians got a much bigger improvement in their memory and cognitive skills because they're, starving themselves for creatine.
Yes. So, the body is asking for it. Please.
Well, we are not designed as strict vegetarians. You know, we are not designed to subsist just on meat. We are not obligate carnivores.
Right.
We are omnivores. We eat some of everything. Mm-hmm. And plant-based foods should be the basis of our diet. But we are also coded to get some meat when we can. It's just that as we evolved, meat was rare. So we're not designed to eat a lot of meat, but we do need some.
Okay. There you go. To be healthy.
To be healthy and for our brains to work well.
We want to work our brains, yes. Well, are you ready to work your brain, Dr. Mixon?
I'm ready to work my brain.
Yay, okay.
Give me a call or two.
If you'd like to call in and be a part of our show today, call early today. We'd love to talk with you, 800-465-8770. And Tom did that very thing. Tom, good morning.
Well, I'm first caller. Hello, how are you?
There you go.
I am tall,
Yes, brilliant. He is.
Incredibly handsome and delusional as hell.
And he looks like he's about to board a yacht today. I noticed he's got the navy blue with anchors on his shorts. And
that's right.
His navy blue and white shirt. He's ready for summer.
That's right. Except that my wife tells me that she doesn't want me to buy a boat because she said, you will be so bored confined on a boat. In 20 minutes, you'll be jumping off and swimming to shore.
Yeah, you'll be the one wanting to swim.
That's right.
Oh, Tom, what can we do for you?
How can we help you, Tom?
I was calling about the hormones or ligands called oxytocin and kisseptin, and wanted to hear what you had to say about it. The reason I'm calling is because I'm from an intimate standpoint with my wife. It's not even on life support, and it's like I won't say severely depressed, but very, very, very depressed.
I understand
And so, I kind of talk about almost makes me want to cry, but, anyway, I was just
You and most of the men in the country, by the way, I would point out. There's a old saw that says, passion begins with adolescence and ends with marriage. Just kind of sad. We will talk about.
You said your relationship with your wife is good, so I was. When I hear you talk about it, it makes me jealous.
There you go. The love doctor. He comes in every Saturday morning with a huge smile on his face.
Yes, I do.
He must know something.
Well, no, but I am one of those fortunate men who gets calls from his wife at a little before lunch fairly often saying, can you come home at lunch? And that just means she's horny. So I run home at lunch.
There you go. You're not going to say
no
to that.
I'm not going to argue. I say, yes, dear, I know how to say that.
Yes.
Let's talk a little bit about kisseptin, which is a fascinating compound. It does increase libido in both males and females. So it is a compound that will increase desire and incidence of sexual activity in women. Unfortunately, it's not on the market.
So, okay, I was going to say, I don't think I've ever heard you talk about this.
Yeah, well, you can't buy it yet.
Okay.
It exists. It is a research drug. You can buy it from chemical supply houses if you are a pharmacist or a bona fide researcher. But it's not in pharmacies, and it's not approved by the FDA for this or anything else. Yes, kisseptin is an interesting compound, and all of the studies thus far say it is the first true aphrodisiac, which is kind of neat.
And the name, kisseptin. Is that why they named it that?
No, it was named because the research group that first discovered the peptide was actually in, I think it was in northern Minnesota, in a town whose name started with Kiss of something. One of those Indian names, you know,
right.
The northern tribe Indian names. And so it got named after the town where the research thing was. So it had nothing to do with kisses, although the name is appropriate, kisseptin.
Yes.
That one would be fun if it were on the market.
Okay.
So, And oxytocin. Oxytocin is not an aphrodisiac. It's a bonding hormone. Okay. And we use a fair bit of oxytocin in our practice, actually. Oxytocin is a protein, a peptide that alters the way our brain perceives the world around us. And it makes it so that you see the most positive spin on everything in your life. Mm. And we produce oxytocin in our brains from close physical contact, massages, and skin-to-skin contact raises oxytocin levels. Gazing into someone's eyes for more than about 2 seconds triggers oxytocin levels, and it makes you feel warm and fuzzy and connected to that other individual. And that's why young lovers spend a lot of time staring into each other's eyes. They're actually giving each other an oxytocin hit.
Wow.
Yeah. Sexual arousal triggers oxytocin. Orgasm triggers a big burst of oxytocin. And oxytocin is stimulated by nipple stimulation. And that is why when women are nursing their newborn, their baby is nursing at their breast, and the mother is looking at the baby's face, and the baby is suckling, and she's getting a big oxytocin release in her head, and that's making her bond to the baby.
Okay.
And so when she's nursing that child every 2 hours, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, she develops an intense lifelong bond to that child.
And that's why she can get up every 2 hours in the middle of the night. She loves this child.
Yes, that's true. And that, and it means though, that bond, because it is such a reinforced bond, the kid can turn into an antisocial monster, you know, later in life, and mother will still love
him. Still love that baby. Yeah, yeah, that's her baby boy.
Fathers don't get that bond because we don't nurse our children. And so, you know, he turns into an antisocial monster. The father will turn him into the cops.
There you go.
Mom will protect him no matter what.
Okay.
Young lovers produce a lot of oxytocin when they are having sex, the sexual arousal and orgasm. And so in a early relationship, people are having lots and lots of sex, and they're bonding to each other. They're looking at each other's face, and they're having the sex, and they get a big oxytocin hit. And that's why young lovers believe that whoever they're having sex with is perfect. It's made for them. It's their other half. It's their soulmate. They came from heaven just for them. No, that was oxytocin speaking. And at some point, as the relationship matures a bit, the sexual frequency declines, and you suddenly realize that this other person has flaws.
It's like, wait a minute.
They're just a human being.
How did I not notice this or that?
Yeah, precisely.
Oh, boy. Okay, so that's what oxytocin is.
So we use a fair bit of oxytocin in our practice. We use it for people that have had post-traumatic stress syndrome. They've had some sort of difficult issue in their past.
Mm-hmm.
We'll give them an oxytocin nasal spray or a buccal lozenge, and it makes it harder for them to remember the bad stuff.
Oh, wow.
So they think about more cheerful things. Music says we got to take a
break. Oh, boy. Yeah, we want to talk more about this.
I'll come back on oxytocin when we get back.
Okay, so Tom, you hang on there. We're going to talk more about oxytocin and what we can do to reignite that flame, perhaps, using supplements and other things that Dr. Mixon will be discussing. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine. I'm Lynette. Dr. Mixon will be right back after this message. Just stay right there.
Like a woman.
And welcome back. It's Leading Edge Medicine, brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinics. My name is Lynette here, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon. And here is that number to get through today. Call early on the show so we can spend some time with you and talk about whatever it is that ails you or concerns you about a diagnosis or your health as you're aging. Here's the number to call. It's 800-465-8770. On the line with Tom from Chehalis, talking about oxytocin. Dr. Mixon.
Well, so, yeah, we use oxytocin fairly often. And it's, we had kind of a experiment with it. The normal prescription use for oxytocin is in stalled labor. If a woman is in labor, but she can't seem to move the baby down and the contractions just are not very good quality, we give them some oxytocin in a intravenous drip. And it makes the uterus contract very, very hard, and that helps push the baby on out. It occurred to me that one of the forms of a female orgasm involves uterine spasm. And so I kind of raised the question with a compounding pharmacist friend, what would happen if we were to put an oxytocin gel intravaginally right up against around the cervix at the top of the vagina? So that it would be absorbed into the uterus and make it hyper-responsive. Would that help women's sexual response. And it turns out that it does enhance orgasmic responses in women.
Hmm. Okay.
And in fact, in about 30% of the women, that's only 3 out of 10, so 7 okay. out of 10 don't get this response. But 3 out of 10 who were able to have single orgasms actually became multi-orgasmic with it. So that's kind of a fun effect. But,
a little side effect yeah, there.
But the problem with that, of course, is that it has to be applied at the top of the vagina, which means you're already in a position where you're putting this gel, you know, with an applicator up to the top of the vagina. So intimacy is already involved by the time you get to that point. So it's not a pill or anything.
Okay.
So that it has limited application. There are two things that have been shown to improve female, two medications that have been proven to improve female sexual responses.
Okay.
One is a prescription drug. It's a little pink pill, as opposed to the man's blue pill. And it, the name of the drug, that they market under is Addy, A-D-D-Y-I.
Hmm. Okay.
Okay. Flubanserin. Flubanserin is the chemical. It's got a lot of side effects. Mm. In fact, the FDA has approved the drug, but they've also said that if a doctor wants to prescribe this drug, that he should go take a special course in handling the side effects and adverse reactions. So it's not one that is very popular because, you know, not a whole lot of doctors want to have to go out and take a special course just to prescribe one medication.
And maybe that's why we haven't heard of it. I have not heard of that one.
Yeah. Okay. It's actually been on the market a few years.
Okay.
It's not popular just because it does have a high side effect profile. The other far safer medication for that is testosterone given to postmenopausal women. Mm. There are a lot of studies showing that a significant number of women who raise their testosterone levels will increase their desire for sex. And that makes perfectly sense if you stop and think about the fact that estrogen is not the primary female sex hormone. A young woman in her romantic peak has 2.5 to 3 times more testosterone in her bloodstream than she has estrogen.
Wow.
Okay. She has 70 to 80 nanograms per deciliter of testosterone and only about 25 to 30 nanograms of estrogen. And, so as women age, their testosterone and their estrogen and their progesterone levels all drop.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay.
But men don't lose interest because our testosterone level, even in old age, is higher than a woman's is at her peak.
Oh, okay.
See, she started off with a peak of 75 to 80. He started off with a peak at 18 of 1,000 to 1,200. And by the time they're 60, hers is like 5, and his has dropped to 200.
Oh, boy. Okay. Right. And still higher.
So there's still a significant mismatch.
Yes.
And so if we can raise hers back to 30, 40, 50, 60, there's a reasonable chance that her libido may improve. Okay. Now that's
okay.
The,
so Tom, having Tom.
That's the hormonal.
That. Yeah. Testosterone.
So, but he needs to find a physician that does testosterone for women, and there are not a lot of them out there.
No.
Well, the thing is, it's the opposition to it, the obstinacy. Unfortunately, my testosterone levels at 68 were like close to 900, and and you're talking total testosterone. Is that correct?
That's total testosterone. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. It's kind of a there's also a mental. I know that. We're all hormonal creatures to a certain extent. I think women more so than men, but there's an obstinacy factor because I, you know, mentioned that because you had talked about that previously, and she said, "Well, I don't want any testosterone." I said, "Well, you
right. Yeah, well, here's the psychology of that, though, okay? And this has been studied repeatedly because it's a big problem. I mean, you know, men have run into this issue forever and a day. Different cultures have handled it different ways. Yeah, prior to the Communist Revolution in China, traditionally what would happen was when a woman hit menopause and lost interest, she would no longer share her husband's bed. She would find a young woman to share his bed, and the young woman would become her maid and wait on her. She'd be the boss, but then the younger woman would service
the man. So she picked somebody homely and very ugly. And
depending on how much she cared for her husband's
happiness. That's true.
So, so different cultures have handled this in different ways. You know, in France, it was just assumed that men would have mistresses. So this sexual mismatch between men and women has been around for as long as there's been people. And the questions are why, and now we're studying why. Here's a fascinating thing. In women, the single biggest corollary with loss of sexual desire is how long she has been in a stable relationship. The longer she is with only one man, the lower her sex drive tends to be. They start off passionate, and over time, if they're in a stable relationship where they feel secure, they get less and less and less interested in sex, which is kind of sad.
Yeah.
You know, but that's the reason why in the dating game, men are often looking for either divorcees or widows, because what happens is when the relationship breaks up, they get interested in sex again.
Mm.
Now, if they'd been interested in sex in the first place, the relationship probably wouldn't have broke up. But once it breaks up, they're now in an unstable situation. Suddenly, they're interested in sex again.
Right.
It's really kind of sad.
I told my wife that. I said, you know what? You leave, you're going to want to go out and no, I won't. Yeah, I go, yeah, you will, because yes, you will.
Yeah, it's just the way it works. Yeah, that is just the way it works, It's shown in study after study after study. Men, on the other hand, do not lose interest with longevity. We may get bored and seek variety, but they don't lose interest in sex.
Hmm.
Okay. And then the other thing that is again reported frequently is that when women turn men down over and over and over again, they lose interest in sex with that woman.
Ah.
Just with that woman.
I have a headache one too many times. Yeah.
They actually may develop physical impotence. They are unable to have an erection with that woman because he has learned that she is going to reject him and reject him and reject him, and that's painful for men. And so they actually have a psychogenic erectile disorder with that particular woman. And first question I always asked men when they came in, when I was a country doctor, and they would come in with ED, is this just with your wife or with everybody?
Ah.
Because frequently they would lose interest in the wife because the wife had lost interest in them. But they were still interested in other women. So, you know, it may not be politically popular, it may not be good, it may not be virtuous, but it's an objective fact of life.
Okay.
Well, okay, that helps quite a bit. In fact, the thing that you just said at the end about as far as women that lost interest when they get divorced or widowed, all of a sudden interest, that to me, that just, that was like the, yes, I felt that in my brain that's probably what happened, but you just confirmed it. And I appreciate that very much.
All right. Take care, sir.
All right. Thank you for your call,
and by the
Tom.
Way, this is nothing your wife planned on, and there's nothing she's doing on purpose. It just happens. Mm-hmm. It's the way men women are made.
Well, there is one thing. She does have a physical ailment that it's not totally debilitating, but she does have RA, and I was reading that can also affect.
Oh, boy.
It does. Yeah. Autoimmune diseases, rheumatoid arthritis, scleroderma. Any painful condition, when you hurt, sex is not high on your list of things, you know, and that's a big complicating factor with older people.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much, Doctor.
You're welcome, sir.
Thank you for calling, Tom. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine. Dr. Jerry Mixon in the studio live today, and we've got quite a few phone calls ready to go, so we're going to jump on the line in just a moment, but we're going to take a quick break right now, and then Frank, we'll get right back to you, and we have a couple of guys named Steve that have some questions for you, Dr. Mixon, so we'll be right back. Stay right there. This is Leading Edge Medicine.
I do love Bob Seger and
yes,
rock
we do.
And roll.
Oh, good morning. You're tuned in to Leading Edge Medicine today with Dr. Jerry Mixon. I'm Lynette, and we have a lot of phone calls to get to, so we're going to dive right in. But if you have a question for the doctor, why don't you call now? Here is that number to jot down and give us a call with your question today. It's 800-465-8770. That is the number that Frank called. Frank calling from Des Moines today. Good morning.
Hello, Good morning. Hello, Frank in Des Moines. How can we help you, sir?
I'm the same age as you, Dr. Mixon, but anyway, I got severe diarrhea a couple of days ago, and then I realized I couldn't urinate, so I went to the ER, and so they had to recatheterize me, and 3 years ago I had my prostate taken out, and I'm just wondering if this diarrhea could have infected my bladder or my urethra, because prior to that, I had good flow.
That's interesting.
I made an appointment to go see my urologist. It took my prostate out, but I have to wait a couple of weeks. I was just wondering if that diarrhea could have affected my bladder because, like I said, I was urinating just perfectly up to that until I got this diarrhea.
Hmm. Yeah. You know, what I'm wondering about is whatever is infecting your bowel may not be limited to your bowel. You may have a cystitis, too. You could actually have an infection in the bladder along with the bowel. Yeah. What have they done about your bowel? Are they just treating the symptoms, or are they what cause have they found?
They didn't do anything. They just gave me some diapers and catheterized me and sent me home.
No, I'm talking about the diarrhea.
They didn't give me no antibiotics or no medication whatsoever.
Okay. But you didn't go in for the diarrhea. You went in because of the bladder,
basically,
right?
I just went because I couldn't urinate. My bladder was backing up, and it was causing a lot of pain in my abdominal area.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, I'm just, you know, I don't know what's causing the diarrhea. And since that was the first symptom that showed up, and then subsequent to whatever is irritating the heck out of your bowel, your bladder started dysfunctioning. I can't help wondering if the two are closely related. Yeah, in a woman, I'd say yes, because of that very short urethra, a woman with diarrhea could very easily infect her bladder, just retrograde from the urethra. But a man, that's very rare because, you know, the urethra runs down the length of the penis, which is a kind of a long barrier, to protect the bladder. So if the bladder is infected in some way, it would be systemic. It would be coming in through probably the bloodstream in some fashion. Oh. So, you know, the other thing I'm wondering about is whatever is causing that raging diarrhea that you've described may be hitting those autonomic nerves that control bladder function.
Oh.
So
when they do the prostatectomy, I know those nerves are real close, and I haven't been able to have an erection since.
Oh dear, yeah. Do they do a total prostatectomy, or do they do it just through the penis with a resectoscope of some sort?
No, they did a total one. They have five holes into my abdomen.
Yeah, yeah. When they do a total prostatectomy, then they're. It is not uncommon to damage the penile nerves. And, yeah, and so erectile disorder afterwards would be. So I can't help wondering, now you've already got some of those nerves damaged, those to the penis. I wonder if you're getting some some nerve dysfunction to the bladder and the bladder neck now related to the infection. Yeah, I'd get back in and talk to them about this and, you know, draw very clearly the connection between the bowel starting first and then the bladder. When they drained your urine, did they send it for culture? Did they just stick a catheter in and decompress you and say goodbye? Or I hope they took a sample for cultures and sensitivities.
No, they didn't mention that. I don't think they did.
Okay. Do you go to one of the institutions where you actually have access to your chart, something like a My Charts website you can go to?
Yes, I do.
Okay. All right. Then go on this. You should have a record called My Chart. It's got different names for different hospitals, but it will show you all of the testing they did and the results of that testing.
Oh.
And go and look and see if there was a urine culture taken.
Okay.
Because a urine culture would be looking for infection in the bladder itself.
Oh.
Okay. Perfect. And if they didn't do one, that's something that needs to be done. Right? If they did it, then knowing whether it's positive or negative would be very interesting. But, you need to get back in and have somebody evaluate not just the bladder. Evaluate the entire disease complex, which is something is irritating the heck out of your bowel, and then secondarily you developed urinary obstruction. And are the two connected? And if so, how?
Okay.
And that's going to take some investigation. That's nothing I can solve over the radio. I simply raise some questions and tell you, get back into somebody that has the facilities and the capacity to investigate it properly, all right?
Okay. Happy birthday, Doctor.
Well, thank you, sir. I greatly appreciate it.
Yes,
Although, birthday month. I've got to tell you, I'm planning on at least another 25 or 30.
Yes.
Because I'm having way too much fun to quit now.
That's right.
So,
hope you live to be 100, Doctor.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for your call, Frank.
Bye-bye, sir.
Bye-bye. This is Leading Edge Medicine, and we're headed to Kirkland now. Steve is on the line. Hi there, Steve. Good morning.
Hello, Steve. Steve. Oh, Stevie.
Let's see. Do we have Steve from Kirkland? Okay, let's pop over to May. May calling from Puyallup. Hi, May.
Hello, May.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My question is, I have a granddaughter that has moles. I don't know if I'm sure you're familiar with it, but it's very rare.
Moles
syndrome? And she
had
surgery. Yeah, moles syndrome. Okay. She had surgery. She's been having stomach issues for the last 12 years. She's 24, and she's just on top of that. They've had to go in and stretch her pylorus. I think that's what it is, to get the food down into her to get it digested and everything, but ended up having, they found this moles with her, causing a lot of issues. She's always in a lot of pain and throws up a lot and nausea. Well, the surgery, they cut through all her muscles to go to the nerves in her spine. There were damaged nerves, which they, I guess, which is supposed to help her pain with her stomach. Anyway, okay. Is there anything she can take?
Right,
she's feeling a lot of pain. They say it
takes
months.
I'm sure she is.
Go ahead.
Wow.
All right. Well, first of all, let's explain Malls syndrome to everybody.
Okay. What is that?
MALS, median arcuate ligament syndrome. There is a large ligament, kind of a tight fibrous band. And this ligament can be so tight that it squishes on the celiac artery. This is the big major blood supply branch from the aorta that takes the blood to the stomach, the liver, the pancreas, parts of the bowel. So when that ligament is squishing down against the artery, it restricts the blood flow.
Oh.
And then all of a large number of your digestive organs are starved for blood supply. And this, of course, can cause lots and lots and lots of problems. Mm. You know, this is one of those things I learned about 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. I've never seen a case. Certainly never treated it. So, you know, it's not something I'm really up to date on. The procedure, if I understand properly, is to go in and you basically try to lengthen or sever that ligament and give those arteries a little more room.
Wow. Yeah, is this a heart doctor she'd go to, Dr.
Mason? No, it'd be a GI surgeon.
A GI, okay.
Gastrointestinal surgeon.
Oh, she went back to Connecticut to a specialist, world renowned, and they cut the ligament. Mm. He did.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, gastric emptying problems, all kinds of things, because you've got the entire upper GI system is starved for blood. I know what it is. I know in rough terms how it's treated, but there's clearly nothing within my bailiwick as an anti-aging doctor. So I've got to plead relative ignorance on this one. Yeah, I'm sure she is.
On a lot of pain medications, but is there something, like, I know aloe vera juice, it seems like was good to take for healing inside. I know it's good outside. Is it good for the stomach, or I don't know.
You know, I have heard that about aloe vera juice my entire adult life, and I've, quite frankly, have never looked for a study that proves or disproves it. Kind of always class that as one of those folk remedies that might or might not have. I ought to look it up sometime, but I can't tell you for sure if aloe vera really has benefit or not. I know my grandma... I used to love it.
Yep, my mom did too.
But I can't tell you if it's really going to help or not, my dear. I'm afraid you've got one of these that has quasi stumped the doctor.
Oh boy, you did it today, May. You stumped the doctor.
You mean woman, you.
Oh, I hope she gets some relief soon.
Yeah, we hope so too. But I don't. Yeah, just if there's something she can vitamin wise or whatever, and she's losing her hair now. Oh, my goodness. Continual PICC line.
Oh, gosh. Well, the PICC line, so has she got an infection? Did she get sepsis or something from...
She's so dehydrated that ending up in the hospital all the time. Hydration and nutrients are on this PICC line.
All right. Darn. So... Okay, no, ma'am. Unfortunately, on this one, about all I can do is offer her my best wishes and prayers.
Yes.
Sorry.
Oh, thank you for your call, May.
Bye-bye, dear.
You bet. Thank you for calling. A quick break, and then we'll be back with more Leading Edge Medicine. And we've got Steve back on the line. Stay right there, Steve. Don't go away. More Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon on the way.
It's another tequila sunrise, staring slowly across the sky.
Get the recalibrated.
Okay. We're back. It's Leading Edge Medicine on your Saturday morning. Hi there. Hope you enjoyed a beautiful sunrise. I sure did. I was a little distracted driving in. I was like, oh, that's gorgeous. It just kept getting more gorgeous. Oh, well, we're here. I'm Lynette, Dr. Jerry Mixon here, and we have Steve on the line. Steve is back, calling in from Kirkland. Hi, Steve.
Hello, Steve.
I'm not calling from Kirkland. I'm calling from Graham.
Oh, okay. Well, we have three Steves today, so you're Steve from Graham.
Steve number one. How can we help you, sir?
Well, maybe so. I've got three of them in my family, and that's what they call me, number one. I'm not sure
if it's
a compliment or insult. I have a question. I'm a diabetic, have been for 23 or 4 years diagnosed, and on medications... And now the doctors keep giving me metformin, and I keep reading metformin, metformin, has been recalled. It's not good for you. It does all kinds of things to bad to your body. It's supposed to rob you of your strength in your body and muscles and so forth and so on. And I thought, you probably are the one person that I would ask and trust the answer from.
Okay.
About metformin.
All right. You remember Dr. Mixon's first rule of medicine? Anything strong enough to help is strong enough to hurt. Right? And okay. metformin is strong enough to help and also strong enough to hurt. It's got pluses and minuses like everything else we use. Metformin does lower your need for insulin. It makes your cells more sensitive to glucose. And so it tends to lower blood sugar, improve glucose metabolism, and if you're insulin dependent, allow you to use less insulin. I tell you what, between asking questions, put your phone on mute because it sounds like you're in a windstorm.
Sorry, I can't do the mute because I'm actually on a Bluetooth.
Oh, with your
driving,
in your car?
So
all right.
I'm
okay.
In my car.
All right.
Driving in my car, that's the normal way.
Okay, yes, that is the best way to drive unless you're driving your bicycle or your motorcycle.
There we go.
All right.
Exactly.
And the motorcycle is even noisier.
That's true.
Yeah. Metformin, the other good thing about metformin is it's a sirtuin 1 inhibitor. It does, to some extent, the same things that rapamycin does. And it extends lifespan. It improves brain function. It makes all of your organs function better. And diabetics tend to die a lot younger than other people. But diabetics using metformin, on average, live 5 years longer than the general population. And that's because of the effect on sirtuin. So it's got some real benefits. It is a quote, anti-aging drug. The downsides of metformin, though, is it inhibits the absorption of B vitamins. So you can't absorb...
Did you say D vitamins or B vitamins?
B as in boy. So all of the B vitamins, you need a lot of extra. And so... If we put someone on metformin, we really ratchet up their B vitamin take. So, you know, we use a B complex. We make sure that everything B1 through 12 are seriously supplemented. And then we check your B vitamin levels in your blood periodically. Because if you suppress B absorption, you can get brain dysfunction, brain fog, memory issues, paresthesias, peripheral neuropathies, muscle weakness. So all of those terrible things you hear about metformin are mostly related to its impact on B vitamin levels that we need for a whole lot of energetic things. And so
I read that and I immediately started taking a large number of vitamin B's all the way from 1 to 12, but
good.
I don't know how much is enough.
Well, and that's why we measure it in your blood. Okay, Mixon's, okay, here are my four rules of medicine. Listen to them carefully and obey them. First rule of medicine.
Yes.
Anything strong enough to help is strong enough to hurt. Second rule. The proper dose of anything is just enough to do the job. The higher the dose, the more complications you get. Third rule, if you don't measure, you don't know. So you have to measure. If you're going to take a drug like metformin, you need to be measuring its effect on your body, and that includes your B levels, all right? And the fourth rule of medicine is one I hate. It says you can do everything right, and things can still go to hell. I mean, that's just life. Okay. The fact that things went wrong doesn't mean you screwed up. It just means that we live in an imperfect world. So,
all right. So basically you've answered my questions. Now, is there a lab test? Can my general physician, my regular physician do a blood test?
They can
measure.
They can order anything I can order. Yes.
Oh, perfect.
They just have to know what to order.
Perfect.
Yeah, the limiting factor isn't what the doctor is allowed to do. The limiting factor isn't what the doctor knows to do. therein lies the problem.
That's true. I'm catching on after 24 years of being a diabetic that a lot of things they told me were malarkey, and some things that, you know, I found out for myself. I know a little bit about what I can and can't eat because I checked my blood sugars and I realized, geez, I had a ice cream bar yesterday and my blood sugar's up today. So that must have some effect.
Hmm.
Well, let me give you a little advice that I give not only to all of my diabetics, but I give this to anybody who even runs an A1C of 5.5 or above long before diabetes.
Oh.
And that is get yourself a continuous blood sugar monitor and put that little patch on the back of your arm and you will get a readout on your cell phone 24 hours a day of what your blood sugars are running. And you'll be able to see what your sugar does when you exercise. You'll see what it does when you sleep. You'll see what it does when you eat this or when you eat that or if you have a snack. And
fantastic.
Okay. And it's...
I see those advertisements, but they're always, if you're sticking your finger four or five times a day and you're taking insulin, then you can order one of these things.
Yeah, and your insurance will cover it if you're a diabetic, mm-hmm. so you're covered. But, you know, there is one, the Lifestyle Libra is one I have my non-diabetic patients buy because it's only a couple of $100. And, you know, you put these little patches on, you have to change them every week or 2 weeks or something. But it gives you an enormous amount of information about your blood sugars and lets you alter your life appropriately. And you do it in real time instead of when you see the doctor every several months.
Yeah, my doctor asked me to come back after 5 months after he gave me the last A1C, and he didn't tell me how much it was. So... I'm shooting in the dark just by doing, my fasting blood sugars in the morning. I'm guessing the rest of the day. But I like your idea, Dr. Mixon. Yeah. That's probably why you're the doctor and I'm not the doctor.
He's the one in the know, we ask.
That's right. So,
I appreciate your answers. And
all right. You take care, my friend. If you need help, give us a call. I'm always here to help.
All right. Thank you for that call, Steve.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
If you want to come to the clinic, of course, we love to have for a patient. That is what I'm on this show for, is to, because we got to remember, it's the patients that come to our clinic that pay for this radio show. Mm-hmm. All right?
Yes.
And if not enough people come to the clinic, then I have to stop buying this radio time because they don't give me this time and I don't get paid for this. I buy this time from the station. Mm-hmm. I pay them.
Oh, you mean
they don't pay me?
You mean you're in business for yourself and have
I am.
On patients, this satisfied one?
You got it. And so
I was a real estate broker for 50 years and I couldn't have lasted that long if I didn't satisfy my clientele. So
you
I understand completely. And I've been seriously thinking about becoming a patient anyway. I think probably now I'm going to do that.
This is the time, yes.
All right. Okay. Take care, Steve.
Okay, and we're going to...
selling job, doctor.
You bet. In fact, we're going to talk about now. Thank you, Steve. Yes, Steve would be the perfect guy to come on in, especially just starting metformin, and find out what's going on in his body, get all of those lab tests.
Yes.
And that's what we focus on at Longevity.
You know, the thing that I used to take a lot of heat from back 20-some years ago when I started saying that about 7 out of 10 type 2 diabetics could stop being diabetics, that we managed to take them down to the point that they're on no medication and have perfectly normal blood sugars. And the debate is, when that happens, have we cured their diabetes or, quote, are they in remission? Now, the argument for remission is, well, you see, if they go back to their old way of doing things, they'll become a diabetic again. And so they're just in remission. They're not cured. My standpoint is, if they have normal blood sugars and they're on no medications, how can I call him a diabetic?
Yes.
I know. But But yeah, about 7 out of 10 people have the capacity of type 2 diabetics. And I have actually had some people that were insulin dependent for 30 years.
Wow.
That we were able to get off all medications and get them down to absolutely healthy, normal blood sugars with A1Cs in the mid fives. Okay. So, you know,
it can be done.
It can be done. Now, it doesn't always happen because about 30% of people have damaged their pancreas so badly that we just cannot manage it.
Okay.
But even then, we can usually improve. So, but yeah, diabetes, it's a lifestyle disease, and we can often make it better.
There you go. Come in to Longevity Medical Clinics, one in Tacoma. We have one in Linwood and in Kirkland, which is expanding in just weeks. We'll tell you more about that in a little bit. But get in for that free health analysis appointment, and let's get you on the road to being healthy. We want to measure so that we do know. We don't want you guessing what you should take because your friend takes it or you heard about this. We want you to take the right dose of whatever it is that'll get you healthy, right, Dr.
Mixon?
And
if you don't measure, you don't know.
Don't know.
That's the third rule.
That's right. Get in. Here's the number to call. It's 866-86-YOUNG. That number is 866-86-YOUNG. You can also come to our website, lmclinic.com. That's lmclinic.com. We'll be back with another Steve in just a moment. In fact, we've got a couple of Steves on the line. Leading Edge Medicine continues. Stay right there.